Morning. We've been blessed with a beautiful morning to gather together. We invite your attention to Hebrews chapter 10, verse 32, and then we're going to read from the faith chapter, Hebrews chapter 11, verse 2, and then 8 through 16. We'll start with Hebrews chapter 10, verse 32. But call to remembrance the former days in which, after you were illuminated, ye endured a great fight of afflictions. And now verse 2 of chapter 11, for by it the elders obtained a good report. And then verses 8 through 16, by faith Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out, not knowing whither he went. By faith he sojourned in the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which had foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore sprang there even of one, in him as good as dead, so many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand which is by the seashore innumerable. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. To read of these old patriarchs and the faith they had, I'm just impressed. Just recently, a couple of our couples from here had gone to see the ark that is supposedly a replica of Noah's ark. And in talking to one of those couples after they came back, they said how impressed they were at the amount of work that Noah did to build that ark. And I was just impressed at the fact that he did that on faith. Never had it rain before, but by faith. And verse 7 says that, by faith, Noah, being warned of God, prepared an ark for the saving of his house. And it's by faith that we need to face each day. Without faith, verse 6 says, it's impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him through faith. Let's bow before him in prayer.
I've been thinking some this week about traveling in foreign lands, and I know some of you have done that longer times than I have. Some of you grew up in foreign countries. And so you'll probably be able to relate to some of the things that I experienced of going to a place where you look different from the people around you. Physical appearances. I remember when I was in Macau in 1993. Macau's this, it was a Portuguese territory at that time. It's on the, what would you say, the southern side of China. And I remember we were walking past this little house one time, and a small child saw us walking by and started crying in fright and was pointing at us and was telling her mother why she was scared of us, because she was using the word guailo, which meant something like pale foreign devils. And I know what it's like to be in a place where you look different from the ones around you and where they speak a different language. You go to some place where it's like in Ukraine, where they were speaking either Russian or Ukraine, or to China, to Macau, where they spoke Cantonese, the type of Chinese. And at first, it doesn't even sound like words. It's just sounds, and you can't even distinguish. It took a few days for it to even start sounding like they were speaking words and not just making sounds. And of course, there's the different food. Some of that is pretty good. But after a while in Macau, it just got to where you had to step into the McDonald's and get a quarter pounder made from that good Australian beef. It tasted good for a change. different habits in Macau. You had to learn to look to your right when you stepped off of the sidewalk out into the street, because they drive on the opposite side of the street. And knowing that the country that you're in, the people have a different allegiance than you do. I remember when Brother Ken and I went to Ukraine in 2003, the night before we were to leave is when the Iraq war started and the bombing of Baghdad began. And it wasn't the most popular thing for the United States to have done around the world. So here we were. I remember sitting in some airports overseas, and I don't remember which ones, probably Vienna. And in the airport lounges, seeing all of these people just watching the news intently about the bombing in Baghdad, and knowing they were looking at it from a different perspective than we were as Americans, because they served a different leadership. All of those experiences were worthwhile. I wouldn't trade them for anything, because they've made me a lot of what I am. But it gets tiring after a while. And I think some of you who have traveled like that know what it's like. You just get worn out. And I got homesick, I'll admit it. I was ready to come back. And I remember when Ken and I came home in 2003, we landed, I think it was at Dulles. It was at night. And it felt so good when the plane touched down and we could walk off the plane. And we went through passport control, hand them your passport. They'd stamp the passport and give it back and smile to you and say, "Welcome home." And then to walk down, I don't remember where we went, but then to look ahead and see my wife and my son waiting there for me. And I know there were others of you there that night, but it's those two that I remember the most. It just felt really good to be home. And I think you can relate to that if you've traveled for a while. It just feels good to get back home to where you're comfortable and to be with people that you love. But I've been thinking lately that less and less does this really feel like home to me. Does it feel like the same place anymore that it used to be? And maybe it never should have felt like home to begin with. But America doesn't feel as much like home when it's a place where you can lose your livelihood because you refuse to bake a cake for two men who want to marry each other. And America doesn't feel as much like home anymore when the police are driving armored personnel carriers through the streets. And it doesn't feel as much like home anymore when a man can be awarded for claiming that he's a woman. And it doesn't feel as much like home when we're in the middle of a presidential election campaign and we have two candidates whose highest qualification is the fact that he's not her and she's not him. And it really doesn't feel as much like home in America anymore when right now we have Mennonite brothers who are in prison and on trial for helping a mother to protect her daughter. And more I've been feeling that this world is not my home. And I've been thinking of a song that Gloria Gaither wrote. "It's not home where men sell their souls and the taste of power is sweet. Where wrong is right and neighbors fight while the hungry are dying in the streets. Where kids are abused and women are used and the weak are crushed by the strong. Nations gone mad. Jesus is sad, and I don't belong." I don't really feel so much at home here anymore as I used to. And like I said, maybe I never really should have felt as much at home as I did, because we're not supposed to feel at home here. We're not the first ones to have felt that way. There have been a lot of people before me who did not feel at home in this world. And you can go all the way back to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph, and you look at what they called themselves. Even back then when they were alive, they called themselves strangers and sojourners. When Abraham needed a place to bury his wife and he went to the Hittites to buy that from them, he called himself a sojourner among them. And Jacob told Pharaoh that the years of his pilgrimage or of his sojourn here had been fewer than that of his father's. they considered themselves to be strangers and sojourners and pilgrims in the land. And it wasn't just them. The early Christians referred to themselves this way. They said that they were strangers in the land and they were pilgrims, that they didn't belong here. Of course, John Bunyan wrote Pilgrim's Progress. Jonathan Edwards preached about the Christian pilgrim. The early brethren knew what it was to be pilgrims and strangers in the land. They moved several times in Germany, and then they moved to Holland, and then they moved to America, and many of those even continued moving here. And they wrote their letters and signed them as your fellow pilgrim. They knew what it was to be in a place but not be at home in that place. And it's not just believers of the past. Today, whether it would be in China or North Korea or Vietnam or in Africa and the Middle East, there are many Christians who know that this is not their home, that they really don't belong here. They're strangers just passing through this land. And even though we don't talk about it so much anymore, we sing about it. And sometimes I wonder how much we really mean of what we sing about that. If we'd stop and think about it, do we really mean it when we say this world is just not my home, I'm just a passing through? What happened to us? And why don't we talk about being strangers and pilgrims anymore? You know, Brother Larry in his prayer alluded to the fact that God has blessed us so richly here, and I think maybe that's it. We focused on the blessings and forgot that there's greater blessings somewhere else because we really aren't at home here. Even if we've come to feel like it, the Bible calls us to be strangers and pilgrims. I'd like to look at some verses from 1 Peter here briefly. And at this point, I'm not just looking into them so much to see what they say as it is to see how Peter was addressing his audience. Verse 1 of 1 Peter, he says it's written to the strangers who are scattered. And in the same chapter, verse 17, he says, pass the time of your sojourning here. And in chapter 2, verse 11, he says, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims. And that's what we're called to be, strangers and pilgrims and sojourners. And in the chapter, the section that Larry read from Hebrews 11, those heroes of faith, the ones who are held up as examples to us, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob here in verses 8 through 16, it's their faith that caused them to continue their pilgrimage, to know that they were just sojourning here, that they weren't permanently settled here. That is what is held up as an example to us. Those patriarchs were called strangers and pilgrims and sojourners. They were people who weren't at home in this world. And that's what we're called to be also. Well, what's it mean to be a stranger and a pilgrim and a sojourner? I know some of the children might hear that word pilgrim and think that I'm talking about this because it's close to Thanksgiving, but that's not the kind of pilgrim that we're talking about. The word stranger really means a person who belongs to or owes allegiance to another country, or an outsider, if you want to put it that way. A pilgrim is just a traveler or a wanderer, especially one who is traveling or wandering through a foreign place. And a sojourner is someone who resides in a place temporarily. One who resides as a stranger, away from one's own people. And if I could use Steve as an example, I'm looking at him here and I'm thinking, you were a sojourner for a time there in those refugee camps. That wasn't your permanent home. It was a temporary home. You were residing there temporarily. But the main ideas behind being a stranger and a pilgrim and a sojourner is that you're not native. You're not born to that land where you are. Think about Abraham. He had come from another land and settled among the Hittites. He wasn't a native to them. He was a stranger to them. You're of another heritage. And I had a little incident this week at Shady Maple that reminded me again that I, even though I've lived here for 20 years, I'm not a native of Pennsylvania. still a stranger to it in some ways. But one of the ideas of being a stranger and a pilgrim and a sojourner is you're not a native of wherever it is that you are at the time. It also means that you're a temporary resident. I was thinking of the man who spoke here and gave his testimony the other Sunday evening. I'm not sure I could get his name right, so I'm not going to try to give his name, but I think you know who I mean. If I remember right, he said he was from the Democratic Republic of Congo. Is that where he was it born, or did I get it backwards? I think he was from there, but because he wanted to go somewhere else, he lived temporarily in, I believe it was Angola. And he was there for several years, but even though he lived there, he did not want to make that his permanent home. He was a temporary resident there because he had in his mind another place that he wanted to move on to, and Angola was just a temporary spot on the way that would help him toward his final destination. So a stranger or a pilgrim or a sojourner is not a native and is a temporary resident and is transient, is still moving on, still hasn't found the spot to settle down in yet. And that's why Abraham and Isaac and Jacob are listed here in the faith chapter as strangers and pilgrims and as sojourners. They were all of those things. Even Joseph in Egypt, if you remember, as he was dying, it says here in Hebrews that he gave instructions to his children about what to do with his body. And he knew that even though his brothers and their families were living in Egypt at the time, that was only a sojourn there. That was temporary, and they were to go back to the land of promise. And he told them, when you go back, take my body with you. 400 years later, they did that. Israel, they sojourned in Egypt. They lived there for 400 years. You would think that would be long enough to make you a permanent resident. Pennsylvania hasn't even been settled for 400 years yet. And yet after 400 years, they went back to where they belonged. And when we look at these examples, we see that with all of them, they were not part of the people around them. They maintained their own distinctive religion and culture. And you think about with Abraham, for instance. He didn't settle down among the Hittites and become one of them. Notice what he did when he wanted a wife for Isaac. He sent his servant back to his own native people to get a wife for Isaac and to bring her to him, his own to where he was living. And you think about Isaac and Rebekah when their sons were old enough to marry. It says that Esau got him wives from the people around, and it grieved his parents. And so then when it was Jacob's time to marry, they sent Jacob back to their own people to find a wife. They maintained their own distinctive religion and culture because they knew that God had called them to be separate from the people around them. It also says that they didn't settle where they were permanently. You ever think about the fact that God said to Abraham, I'm going to give you all of this country. This is going to be an inheritance for you and for your descendants forever. Now, if I owned a piece of property, I would think that that's a place I could build a house on. Abraham didn't do that. Abraham never did build a house. In fact, he never had legal title to any property there except for a grave. And he lived in a tent, as did his son and his grandson. They lived in tents, it says here, specifically because they were looking ahead to the fulfillment of God's promise in a permanent place, a permanent city that God himself was going to establish. They knew they were not settled permanently where they were. They were looking for the fulfillment of God's promise. Verse 10 of chapter 11, he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. They knew that where they were, they didn't belong there as natives. They were only living there temporarily, and it was only a stopping point on the way to the final fulfillment of God's promise. And that's the same for us when we think about us being strangers and pilgrims and sojourners. We're not to be one with the native people here. And I know when I say that, in today's politically correct times, You say something like that and people will start calling you a xenophobe and other names that they might not even know what they mean. But I'm just acknowledging reality, spiritually speaking, and put it in this sense, not naturally speaking, but spiritually speaking, you and I are not of the same heritage or the same nationality as the people of the world around us. We're not natives to the world because we have been called by Christ to be in his kingdom. And we're members of that kingdom now. And so we need to know that as strangers and pilgrims and sojourners, that we're not one spiritually with the people of the world around us. And we also need to know that we're not living here permanently and that we're still on a journey to someplace better. And we became strangers and pilgrims and sojourners. We weren't born that way. There is nobody who is born a spiritual stranger and spiritual pilgrim and spiritual sojourner. We became that way when Christ purchased us with his own precious blood. Colossians chapter 3, verses 20 and 21 say this. And the basic idea there is that we used to be members of the kingdom of darkness. Christ paid for us with his blood, and because of his payment, it's, if you want to put it in terms of traveling or emigrating to another country, it's like he paid for all of the visa fees and all of the transportation fees and everything else that was necessary for us to leave the kingdom of darkness and be translated to his kingdom. And that's how we became strangers and pilgrims and sojourners. And we are strangers and pilgrims and sojourners here in this life. And we're called to be that, and we're called to follow the examples of those in the Bible who were strangers and pilgrims and sojourners. But what does that mean on a practical level? How do you live that out? Well, let's look at John chapter 17. There's a verse here that's helpful for all of us to remember. Actually, I'll read verses 14 through 16. Jesus is praying. He's praying for his disciples right here, but it also says later in his prayer, he says, "Neither pray I for these alone." So this prayer is also for us. "I have given them thy word, and the world hath hated them, because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. I pray not that thou shouldest take them out of the world, but that thou shouldest keep them from the evil. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world." So this is the first thing we need to remember as strangers and pilgrims and sojourners here, is that even though this is our temporary residence, it's where we find ourselves right now, it's where God has put us, we're not to be of this world, of its substance, following it. And then we look back at 1 Peter chapter 2, and here we're going to look a little more at verse 11, thinking again of what it means to live as strangers and pilgrims and sojourners. 1 Peter chapter 2, I'll read verses 11 and 12. "Dearly beloved, I beseech you, as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that, whereas they speak evil, they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation." And so to live as strangers and pilgrims and sojourners, really the first thing to remember is just that we're called to be different. And I know none of us likes to be different. Nobody likes to feel like you're standing out wherever you are. That's one of the things that you notice when you go to another country where the people appear different from you. You stand out and you feel it. And you feel like people are looking at you, and you're probably right, they are. And we don't like that. We want to blend in with people and fit in, and it's natural, but we're called as strangers and pilgrims and sojourners to be different, to accept that God has called us to that. There should be a distinction between the children of God and the children of the world. There should not be a blurring of the boundary between those two. We're to be separate. I was thinking this morning about the plagues in Egypt. And you think about what God said about several of those plagues. He said there's going to be this plague happen in Egypt, but it's not going to happen to my people because I want to show that there's a separation between them. And there should be just as much separation now between us and the people of the world. We're called as strangers and pilgrims to be different. One of the ways that we will be different if we're strangers and pilgrims and sojourners is that we will think with a different logic. Sometimes when you're in another culture, people will do things and say things that just make no sense to you of why they would choose to do what they did. And you know that to them it must be perfectly reasonable because nobody there seems to think it's anything out of the ordinary. But to you it just doesn't make sense. And a lot of that has to do with the values that we have and the places that we start in our reasoning. An example of this, among the Navajo people, family is, or at least was, family used to be one of the most important things, a lot more important than possessions. And so if you had something and somebody else in your family needed it, well, in Navajo culture, the right thing to do is just give it to them. That doesn't come so easy for us. But that's because that was their conclusion because they started out with a different value. Among the Chinese, traditionally at least, there was a high respect for elders. And so decisions sometimes would be different, made differently by them than they would be by us, just because of the way that they thought and the way that they started out in their thinking. Now, take that for us, living in the world, we're called to think with a different logic. Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. I beseech you, he says, therefore, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service, and be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. As strangers and pilgrims and sojourners here, we're to think with a different logic, the logic of a renewed mind. One that has been given a different set of values by Christ, and one that has been taught to think differently than the world around us. We shouldn't come to the same conclusions as the people around us, and frankly, there are times that they're not going to understand us, and they hopefully don't always understand the things that we do. We operate on different logic systems than the world. As strangers and pilgrims, we should live a different lifestyle. Go back to 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11. He says, as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul. Now, when we read that term fleshly lusts, probably the first thing that comes to mind is thinking about lust and evil desires such as immorality. And of course, those are included, but this is a lot more than just that. This is carnal lusts and desires. Basically, what it's really talking about here is the things that we would try to satisfy ourselves with that belong only to this life, that exist only for the here and now. Trying to find my fulfillment in the things that are around me right now, that I can touch, that I can see, that I can experience in this life only, that cannot be carried over into heaven. Those are the fleshly lusts that Peter's writing about. And not everything around us in this world is bad at all. In fact, God has given us so many blessings, as Larry referred to in his prayer. God has given us so many things to enjoy in this world. And there's nothing wrong with that. So that if you want to look out the window and you think you're glad to see the sun shining and that's a blessing from God, you're right, it is. And we should enjoy that. And if you want to go home today and eat your Sunday dinner and tell your wife that it tasted good and thank her for that, do that. It's a blessing from God, and enjoy it that way. But it's in the time that we want to take the things that are here and accumulate them to ourselves and think that those things are going to bring us ultimate and eternal fulfillment and satisfaction. That's what Peter is telling us to abstain from, to stay away from, actually to fight back against. Those things that otherwise would be good can become lustful when we pursue them too much and we think they're going to bring fulfillment. And they become sinful when we look around, first we look at what we have and what we do, and then we look around at other people and see what they have and what they do, and suddenly what we have and what we're doing just doesn't seem like it's enough, and so we have to get more. That's what Peter is talking about with the fleshly lusts here. And as pilgrims and strangers and sojourners, we need to fight against that and live a different lifestyle. There are a lot of different areas where we could apply this, but I thought of a couple that are relevant to me. One is possessions. And this is something I struggle with quite a bit. I look around and I have eyes that can see that there's people that have more things and nicer than I do. And there's times that that bothers me. I won't deny it. I've got to be honest about it. I know it's not right, but I fight against that. Possessions are one of those fleshly lusts sometimes. I was just thinking about when we went to Macau, I was with a group, and we bought a lot of souvenirs over there. And I'm sure you've done that too when you've traveled. Some of us bought some just really cheap suitcases over there and filled them up so that we could bring things home. And we actually had to have a couple of boxes shipped back of the things that we had bought. We traveled and we came home with some souvenirs. But as strangers and pilgrims and sojourners, we're not taking any souvenirs to the home that we're going to. And when you and I pull up to the pearly gates, we're not going to be pulling a trailer with our possessions behind us. All that stuff is just going to be stuff that we've left behind here. And I think about possessions. Jesus said, "Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth." But that's what the temptation is. But earth is not my final home. My final home is somewhere else, so why am I not laying up my treasure there? It wouldn't make any sense if you were moving to a country to put all your money in a bank account in the country where you were leaving. You would send it on ahead to where you were going to live later. And that's what Jesus says. Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. And as pilgrims and strangers and sojourners, I have to ask myself this question. Do I live like I'm going to have those possessions forever? What about our houses? Think about Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. They lived in tents, a temporary dwelling. And I'm not saying you need to go home this afternoon and burn your house down and pitch a tent in your backyard. But at the same time, what about our houses? What about the attention and the focus that we put on our houses? And we look around and we see what other people are doing to their houses and how they're fixing them up and decorating them and remodeling. And ours just doesn't seem quite as nice as it used to. And we become discontent with that. And then we come to church and we sing, "A tent or a cottage, why should I care?" And yet we are thinking, while we're singing it, maybe about what room we're going to remodel next. Or we say, "I'm satisfied with just a cottage below." Oh, really? If it's just a cottage that I'm satisfied with, then why do I have to keep building on? And again, I know there's got to be balance, so don't take what I'm saying and stretch it farther than I'm intending. But at the same time, think about our focus and think about where we're trying to find satisfaction and fulfillment. If somebody came into our house who was a native of this world, would they be able to tell by the way that we live that we're not a native of this world? What about our experiences? I like to travel. I used to travel a lot, and I enjoyed it. I like seeing new places, you know, going places, just doing different things. I don't get to do that very much anymore. So do I feel like something is lacking in my life if I don't get to travel the way that I used to? That belongs to this world. There's a greater world ahead of me. Think about, I'm going to have eternity to explore that one. I remember there was an older brother, he's gone on now from this church, that he had not got to take his wife some of the places that he would have liked to, but he told her, well, in the new heaven and the new earth, then I'll show you this. And really, that's where our focus needs to be. What about sports? If I asked you how many of you checked the cricket scores from England this morning, how many of you would raise your hands? Or the rugby scores from Australia? Probably nobody. Because that's not your native land. And you don't care about those things because that's not where you're from. Of course, if I asked about baseball, the American sport, some of you probably could tell me what happened in the World Series game last night. But you know, in a few days, either the Indians or the Cubs are going to win the World Series. Do you really think there's going to be dancing on the streets of heaven after that game? I don't think it's going to make a whole lot of difference there. And so if we're immersing ourselves in those activities and experiences here, what are we doing about eternity? Our eternal heavenly home. We're called to live differently. And there's more things that I could mention here. Those are just a couple that came to my mind because there are some that I struggle with. Peter says those things war against the soul. We have those things that are surrounding us here in this life, and it's like they're all raising their hands and saying, pay attention to me, look at me, come over here, take care of me. And we get so wrapped up in our possessions and our experiences and the things here that we forget about our souls sometimes. And that's what's going to live forever. So as strangers and pilgrims, we're called to think with a different logic, and we're called to live a different lifestyle, and we're called to follow different leaders. John chapter 18, verse 36, Jesus said to Pilate, my kingdom is not of this world, else would my servants fight. There's a different kingdom that we're citizens of. We pledge allegiance to a different state. We don't pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and give everything to that because we have pledged our allegiance to God and to His kingdom. Now, we still recognize the state here. I know that it's possible to hold dual citizenship like Paul did. Paul was a citizen of Rome and he was also a citizen of the kingdom. And if you think of it in a natural way, it's possible to be a citizen of Canada and of the United States. And I don't want anybody to think that I'm like not appreciative of the blessings that I do enjoy as an American. I do. And as far as possible, Christians are called to be obedient to the laws of the earthly nation. But there may be instances where meeting the demands of one citizenship violates the demands of the other. And what would you do then? If you were a citizen of the United States and a citizen of, let's just say, Canada, because I know you can hold dual citizenship there. Unlikely event, I know, but suppose the United States and Canada would declare war on each other and would be at war, and you were a citizen of both. Who are you going to support? How are you going to decide which one you're going to give your allegiance to? And that's a little bit the way it is for us as members of Christ's kingdom. We have an allegiance to Him. And at the same time, as earthly citizens of this nation, we do have responsibilities there. But if those responsibilities conflict, then what? How do we decide what we're going to do? Well, the Bible is clear. That's an eternal kingdom. And so our responsibility then is to obey Christ. We ought to obey God rather than man, the apostles said. And I'll give two examples that I thought of with this. One would be in military participation. The state would say, especially in the time of draft, kill our enemies. But in order for me to do that, I would have to violate God's law that says, love your enemies. So what am I going to do? Would I disobey God in order to obey the state? It's pretty clear. I ought to obey God rather than man. And here's one that's relevant. And I struggled with whether or not to discuss this, but I'm going to because I know it's timely right now, and some of you are thinking about this. What about voting? And please don't think that this is a sermon about voting. It's not. This is one minor point of application out of the message, so don't get distracted by that. There are a lot of Christians in the world who will say that it's our duty as believers to vote and that we need to in order to try to redeem the culture and delay the slide into degeneracy. The society will say that we need to participate in the political process, that it's our duty to vote. Well, I'd like to give you something just to think about on the other side of that. What if both of the candidates in a race openly live in rebellion to God's righteousness? And I think that's the case in this election, presidential election. And what if both candidates habitually practice deceit? And I think that's also the case in this presidential election. Now, I'm a citizen of the United States of America, but I'm also a citizen of God's kingdom. And it's written into the United States Constitution that treason, one of the things that constitutes treason is adhering to the enemy, aiding and abetting the enemy. Well, if as a citizen of God's kingdom, I would choose to support someone who promotes unrighteousness and is a deceiver habitually, would I be aiding and abetting God's enemies by doing that? I'd rather be guilty of dishonoring my land than of committing treason against Christ, my King. And as I have thought about that, has really put politics in a different perspective for me this election year. I got to admit, last spring, the primary season was kind of a distressing time for me. But thinking about it in this sense, that I am a citizen of the heavenly kingdom that is going to stand forever, has reassured me that I don't need to despair in times of political turmoil in the earthly land where I live. God will never be voted off the throne, and Christ will always be king. And this has given me confidence in exercising my right not to vote. And we are strangers and pilgrims here. We don't belong here. This is not our native land. And we shouldn't have settled down here because this isn't our home, and we're still traveling to our final destination. And because we're strangers and pilgrims here, we're called to think with a different logic, to live with a different lifestyle, and to follow a different leader. And I don't know about you, but as I get further advanced into middle age, we'll put it that way, I'm really glad that this isn't going to be my final home, that I can look forward to being at home. And I know some of you have told me that before, some of you who are older. And I know when my wife and I visited with Margie Lachman before she died, she kept saying, I just want to go home. And I'm starting to understand that more. And I think some of you understand that even better than I do. I look forward to going home. And I don't need to feel at home here. In fact, I really think I shouldn't feel completely at home here because it's not my home. And you shouldn't feel strange for being a stranger here. We aren't homeless people. We're not stateless. Those of the world, yes, they might be citizens of this world, but they're not citizens in Christ's kingdom. Look at Ephesians chapter 2, verses 12, and then contrast it with verse 19. We're no longer alienated from Christ's kingdom. We're now citizens of Christ's kingdom. And yes, we're not there yet, but that's our native land, and we're going there, and that is our home. We have a homeland that's awaiting us. Paul said in Philippians 3:20, our citizenship is in heaven. And Hebrews 13:14, we're looking forward to that city. There is a place where we will belong. The rest of that song by Gloria Gaither, she wrote, I belong to a kingdom of peace where only love is the law, where children lead and captives are freed and God becomes a baby in the straw, where dead men live and rich men give their kingdoms to buy back a song, where sinners like me become royalty and we'll all belong. Yes, I belong, and I'm going someday home to my own native land, where I'll belong, and it seems like I hear the sound of a welcome home band. Yes, I'll belong. No foreigner there singing a sojourner's song. I've always known I'm going home where I belong. This world is not my home. I'm glad that we have a homeland, where there won't be any violence in the streets. Instead, says the wolf and the lamb will be at peace with each other. And there won't be any lies and deceit from our leaders there because we'll be following the one who is himself the truth. And there won't be any election for president every 4 years there because God's going to reign on his throne forever. This world's not my home. But if I keep walking in faith, someday I'm going to enter my homeland and I'm going to hold out my passport and it's already been stamped with the blood of Jesus. And I'm going to be ushered in with a welcome home. And I'm going to see the ones that I love. This world is not my home. That's my home.
I'm fairly confident that every believer here today would agree, after a clear explanation on strangers and pilgrims, that this is the way it should be in my life. The difficult part of the message is this. Can we say, this is the way I want it to be in my life? To take it from our mind to our heart and apply it. Let's stand as we pray.